This podcast brought to you by Peterson Auto Group. With 5 stores and 10 brands and more than 1,800 new and used vehicles to choose from, Peterson Auto Group likely has your perfect car.
Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, Paul J. and Chris on a Thursday morning. Kind of an unusual topic brought up by you moments ago.
Well, this is a story that just kind of hit the news actually about 30 minutes or so ago. And I don't know. I see this as a small, not a huge, but a very small victory for people who are anti-abortion. Okay. And I'll explain why.
Okay.
Florida is going to become the very first state of all 50 to issue what essentially is a birth certificate to women who have had a miscarriage. Now, Governor Rick Scott of Florida signed a bill yesterday that's going to allow the state to start issuing what they call certificates of non-viable birth, which is essentially a birth certificate, but it indicates that the child did not survive. And they're going to start doing that in about a month, beginning July 1st.
Why?
Well, under the Grieving Families Act, the state will issue the certificates only if parents request them. If they don't request them, then they will just treat it as they do now. It would be available to women whose pregnancies end after 9 weeks, but before 20 weeks. Now, pregnancies already in Florida, pregnancies that end at 20 weeks or later are considered stillbirths, and death certificates do have to be issued for those.
Okay, that was my question. Now, can this aborted? Well, it's not aborted.
Well, it's not. It's. I mean, it's naturally aborted. But
naturally aborted tissue be used to identify parentage, etc., on these unborn fetuses.
I'm not entirely sure, to tell you the truth. As far as DNA goes, I suppose they could. But parents also may request a birth certificate in such cases. Parents would be able to name the lost child on this new certificate. So they would say, okay, after 9 weeks. Now, if you miscarry or lose a pregnancy before 9 weeks has gone by since conception, then apparently they still won't do that. But the certificates will contain language that they're they say they're not to be used as proof of a live birth, because clearly one did not happen. But they will issue a certificate that indicates that this was, at one time, a person, in a person's earliest stages. Let's put it that way.
Well, if it can be used to identify parentage, I suppose there may be some use there. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, I think essentially this is it's a very, very, very small victory for people who are anti-abortion, because the state of Florida then says if you have a baby that has gone past 9 weeks since conception, that you can actually get a birth certificate, meaning that it is a baby. And not considered just to be a fetus or just matter, I suppose. And so I don't know if people who are anti-abortion would consider that to be any kind of a victory, but it's not in the cases of an abortion. In the case of an abortion, they still don't issue you anything. But in this case,
it's pretty interesting.
Well, it is. But after 20 weeks, now, after 20 weeks, they acknowledge, which is about 5 months, they acknowledge that it's not miscarried, but is in fact stillborn, and so they have to issue a death certificate. And they said in those cases, the parents can request a birth certificate as well as a death certificate. So if you just want to have that. And I've known people that considered that to be, you know, and people who are either anti-abortion or pro-life, depending on how you look at it, consider that just, you know, conception is when life begins. And if that's the case, I've known people who actually, the women had a miscarriage, but they gave the baby a name anyway. And listed it in family records and stuff like that.
Well, I you know, and that's fine.
That's people's prerogative.
Sure.
You know?
Heck yes.
Entirely up to you.
Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting.
But I was kind of curious as to what people thought of that. And if you'd like to comment on it, we have a local number, 336-3700, 336-3700, and outside the area, 1-800-529-KBOI, which is 1-800-529-5264, or you can hit #670 on Verizon Wireless.
Remember, you are listening to Paul J. and Chris on 670 KBOI.
Hey, I get a new boss.
You do?
Head of the Idaho State Police, the head of the State Racing Commission.
Oh. Huh? Well, that's interesting.
Huh?
That I did not know.
Huh? Now you do. Let's go to Pro-Life. Start us off this morning. Pro-Life, good morning.
Yes, it's true that when sperm meets egg, there's a new person on Earth. You can, whether that's done in a Petri dish inside of a woman, you can capture that child and put it in any woman and on her uterus to create the nourishment, and you get the very baby from the parents. DNA, the personality, which comes from God or however you want to look at that.
Sure.
But I think it's interesting that Florida compromised and said that from 9 weeks to any time after that, I'm sure there was discussion there about, you know, at fertilization, that equals personhood.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Congress needs to define personhood, and every once in a while, that will be introduced. But they always use the word conception. But everyone must realize that the American College of Obstetrician and Gynecologists have redefined conception as implantation.
Mm-hmm.
So the word you have to use for the old word conception is fertilization. That's the medical term now, what sperm meets egg, fertilization.
Okay.
So Ron Paul, for example, he's an obstetrician and gynecologist. He would introduce legislation defining personhood at conception, and he knows that that's implantation. But his people that voted for him, they thought he was meaning fertilization. And so he was somewhat deceiving them, and he knew that. I kind of like him, but he's wrong on that issue. So, but anyway, that's the big question. What's government going to do about defining personhood? And Congress, you can't even get a bill into a committee. Now, maybe now that all these Republicans are there, maybe they'll be able to have some congressional hearings and have the medical people come and testify when personhood really begins.
In Florida, Rick Scott is the governor, and he is a Republican.
Right.
And it became, as I said, the first of all 50 states to simply you know, say, this is why I think I'm glad you called, because I wanted you to know if you thought this was a step in the right direction. It's probably not obviously the end what you're going for, but is it a step in the right direction that they're going to acknowledge that at least at 9 weeks after fertilization, that the baby can have actually a birth certificate, even if it is miscarried?
Yeah, it is a step in the right direction, because it's causing people to at least talk about it. But see, here's what the American College of Obstetricians, the medical profession, almost all the people take birth control. And what birth control pills do is they tell the woman's body that she's already pregnant. So fertilization can take place. The person, the little baby's there, but it can't implant. It washes out, dies of starvation. Now, that's technically should be a murder. That's technically killing your baby, and nobody wants to go there. You can't get the pro-life community, National Right to Life, Idaho Chooses Life, Idaho Right to Life. they don't want to discuss that because it's so unpopular. But that's the actual fact. And so we're a way, long ways from where we need to go to preserve life. And, I mean, I try to do what's right, but, you know, that's very unpopular. I'm not a very popular guy, but I'm telling you the truth.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff. Thanks.
Appreciate the call. Well, and, you know,
what he says is true there. You don't always have a popular situation.
Yeah. Well, and if he were to do this exact same thing that Florida Governor Rick Scott did, he would probably change it to, you know, just immediately you should be able to get a birth certificate. But again, that would mean somebody who takes, you know, what's that called, RU486, the day after pill. Or any kind of birth control would then probably legally be charged with murder. And I don't know. I don't think it's ever going to get to that point.
It'll never. This is an unsolvable problem. I mean, it always has been, always will be. Right, wrong, in between, whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah. Because people, I mean, it's like he said. I mean, he tends to be sometimes unpopular because of his view on it, and it's sure. it's not something where you're going to get 100% of you know, really agreement on anything. And people interpret it differently. There are some people who consider themselves to be religious and Christian, and they say, well, you can't find anything in the Bible that indicates that, you know, that life begins at fertilization or conception. And then there are other people who can cite different verses. I know there's one in Judges that simply it said that someone's wife was told that since she was expecting a baby not to drink wine because it could hurt the child, you know, not to drink any strong drink. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, you know, they say that that indicates that there actually is a child in there and not, you know, just some part of the woman's body. But I think that essentially you're never going to get women's groups to agree with this.
Yeah, true.
So, yeah, and like you said, I mean, this is a difficult it's a difficult subject to talk about. It's a difficult subject to get people to agree upon. And there are some people who say simply that, you know, when a living person's when an adult woman's body is involved, that she should have the final say on what goes on there. And then there are other people that say, you know, no, once you've got a baby, you
it's
know.
It's not just you anymore.
Yeah, it's not just you anymore. So, you know, there obviously there are at least two schools of thought and probably more like 100.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. KBOI News Time, 8:56. You're listening to Idaho Talks Live.
If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
All right, top of the morning, Paul J. and Chris. We are back for the final hour.
Mm-hmm.
President Trump this morning directly accused the Obama administration of improperly surveilling the American people one day after a congressional subpoena was issued seeking records from U.S. spy agencies about Obama officials' requests. The CIA, NSA, FBI all served with subpoenas yesterday afternoon for documents relating to former Obama National Security Advisor Susan Rice, ex-CIA Director John Brennan, former U.N. Ambassador Samantha Power. The subpoena is signed by House Intelligence Committee Chairman Representative Devin Nunes. Referenced the unmasking of U.S. citizens. The big story is the unmasking and surveillance of people that took place during the Obama administration. What do you think of that?
Well, when it comes to the unmasking, a lot of what they're talking about is when there was surveillance against non-Americans who were on American soil or
communicating with American citizens.
Right.
And names were mentioned quite often. You heard if, you know, somebody was being surveilled who, you know, was a foreign national of some sort. And when they talked on the phone about something that was surveilled, they were talking to an American citizen. And you're not supposed to say who that is or what's going on, I guess, according to the rules of surveillance,
right,
if it's an American citizen. However, there are people, obviously, the ones who are doing the surveillance are going to know who it is. And I guess officially or legally, you're supposed to simply forget that or, you know, or mark it out with a Sharpie. I don't know which, but
it is so strange to those of us who do not
engage in those kind of conversations.
Engage in these kind, really?
Yeah.
Engage in these kinds of conversations, mm-hmm, to go, you got to play by the rules here.
But like, for instance, if you are talking to someone at a foreign embassy, you know, whether it's in Washington, D.C. or, you know, any other place in the United States, then chances are there is surveillance of your phone call and somebody is listening in on it. And it's could be the CIA, could be the FBI, could be the NSA, could be somebody else entirely, could be somebody from a foreign country. Quite often names are mentioned. And so whoever's doing the surveillance has that information. But if it's about American citizens, they're not supposed to leak that information. They're not supposed to tell you what's going on. So with all of the things that have been going on lately in the Trump administration, where we keep hearing that somebody has said that Jared Kushner talked to this person, or, you know, some other person in the Trump administration talked to a Russian or somebody like that, they're trying to figure out, now, where did you get this information, and did you get this information legally? And because a lot of this happened before Inauguration Day, which was January 20th, and if it happened before Inauguration Day, it was under the Obama administration. However, was it legal? Was it illegal? And, where did whatever's illegal come in? Was it the person who leaked the information? Was it the person who failed to keep the names a secret, or was it the surveillance in and of itself? And they're going to have Senate hearings, and they're going to have hearings in Congress to try
to get out of this muddle.
Probably not.
No,
I'm thinking, and they're going to try to figure out if anybody broke the law, or if they did, when they did, if they did, that sort of thing. And it's all very kind of convoluted and complicated, because in some respects, it's not against the law for a private citizen to talk to a foreign dignitary. However, it is against the law for somebody to talk to a foreign dignitary on behalf of...
To try to sell them something.
Well, yeah. On behalf of the United States.
Yeah.
In other words, to represent the United States if they are technically working for someone who is not yet the president. And they've been saying this about Jared Kushner because he has had dealings overseas. Well, you know, an awful lot of international businessmen have.
I was talking with Tam this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Is he ever going to turn a little bit on his father-in-law?
My guess would be no. Have you ever heard him say a word?
No.
No. Nobody interviews him because he doesn't want to be interviewed. You know, he doesn't come right out. He doesn't seek the cameras.
I'm not sure I could identify his voice.
I think Jared Kushner is a person that if you had a secret, you could certainly trust him to keep it because he doesn't seem to say much.
Yeah.
But no, I couldn't identify his voice either.
Hmm.
But and that's kind of where the whole thing is. You know, if they are accusing people who are currently in the Trump administration of doing things between the election in November and January 20th, then who found out about it? Who is releasing this information? You know, who?
Yeah,
said the owl.
And unmaskings and all of these words that we hear,
mm-hmm,
by whose definition?
Well, yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, and what, you know, what actually qualifies as simply a business deal, what qualifies as some sort of espionage, and if you go back far enough, if you obtained information that somebody was trying to fix the election, I'm not saying that's what happened, but that's what they've been looking for, obviously. And if you find out that somebody did fix the election, was it even legal to obtain the information that you obtained? Did you get a court order to do so? And apparently those are not that easy to get, because most judges will not sign something that says, yeah, go ahead and spy on some Americans and let's see what's going on.
Right you are. KBOI News Time, 9:13.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul Jay and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. KBOI rewards code CIA. How easy is that?
How do you spell that?
CIA.
Oh, okay. That works out pretty well.
CIA. That'll work.
It's different than OIC.
Yeah. All right. Big story this morning.
Mm-hmm. We've, you know, in keeping with, we're just kind of doing a lot of controversial subjects.
Well, we
got done talking about spying. And we just talked a little bit about abortion.
Hey, talking about climate change.
So, yeah, let's go into climate change. Yeah. Why not? Building suspense about the U.S. role in the world, the president is planning to announce today whether the United States is going to stay in the global climate pact. The White House has kind of indicated that a withdrawal from it is likely, but the president has been known over the past few months to occasionally change his mind at the last minute on some major decisions, and could do that here. There is a press conference that the president has set for 3 o'clock Eastern time, so 1 o'clock our time. So we're really just a little less than 4 hours away from knowing what's going on here. But with withdrawing from the pact was one of the president's main campaign pledges. But there are allies of the United States, in fact, NATO and others, who have expressed kind of an alarm about the likely consequences of the United States abandoning the pact. Now, aides at the White House were divided about this, and the president's decision may not be entirely clear-cut. Aides were deliberating on caveats in the language, according to one official. So they may be trying to word this just right so that the United States will still have at least some sort of obligation to reduce emissions, that sort of thing. But on the other hand, nobody else in the world will be able to decide except the United States. And I'm guessing if you word it carefully enough, you can probably get that done.
Which is the way we like things.
Well, we do like to be a sovereign nation because we are a sovereign nation. Now, the president said yesterday he was still listening to a lot of people who have opinions on both sides. And he promoted in a tweet that he's going to be announcing this in the Rose Garden at 1 o'clock our time today. People have cautioned that no decision, and Sean Spicer said this yesterday, he says whatever the decision is, it's not final until the president announces it. And he has the final say on this particular decision.
True.
He does tend to seek counsel from both inside and outside advisors, and many, of course, have different opinions. Some of them have different agendas and come from different sides. Some things that may happen now, abandoning the pact would isolate the United States from a great number of international allies who will tell you straight out that they spent years negotiating the agreement, which was signed in 2015, to fight global warming, human-caused global warming, and pollution by reducing carbon emissions in nearly 200 nations. I think it's about 194.
Right.
Now, while traveling in Europe last week, the president was pressed by those in NATO to stay in the deal. The Pope even asked him to do that, which is interesting. But withdrawing would leave the United States aligned only with Russia among the world's industrialized economies. And there's that word again, Russia.
Yep.
You know, whether you're quoting...
Pops up a lot, doesn't it?
Whether you're quoting the Ipana commercial or the Brady Bunch, you say Russia, Russia, Russia. Now, yep. American corporate leaders have also appealed to the businessman turned president to stay in the pact.
Mm-hmm.
And those include Apple, Google, no surprise there, but also Walmart, so a bit of a surprise, and even some fossil fuel companies, ExxonMobil, British Petroleum, BP, Shell. They say the United States should abide by the deal. Now, you would think if it is a business decision to make, you know, business a little less restrictive in this country, that those would be three companies that would especially say, oh, yeah, get out of this thing.
Yeah, you would.
But apparently they don't want to. Now, in a speech in...
Well, you got to have some control.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Which is why, despite the fact that we have the United Nations... The United States has never agreed that just because the United Nations votes on something that we necessarily have to follow through.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good idea to know what people are thinking, to have input from all the countries in the world, but our decisions are still within the United States. Now, in a speech in Berlin, the Chinese premier said that fighting climate change is a global consensus and an international responsibility, which is interesting because China... is probably the most polluted place in
the world.
They have 1.5 billion people, and India has almost 1.5 billion people, so they're actually very close in population now. But India doesn't have the air pollution that China has. They have a lot more industry. And in this speech, he said that China in recent years has stayed true to its commitment. That could be true. It might not. President Obama enacted the deal without U.S. Senate ratification. And there are certain people who say, well, that never should have been done. However, the president occasionally does have some leeway, as we have learned from President Trump just in the last few months, to make certain decisions.
Right.
They can be overturned. And of course, he's done that as well. A formal withdrawal would take several years, according to the experts. And that is a situation that led the president of the European Commission to speak very dismissively of the president yesterday. He said that Trump apparently doesn't comprehensively understand, or you could say understandably comprehend, either one is correct, the terms of the accord, though European leaders tried to explain the process for withdrawing to him in clear, simple sentences, they said, during the summit meetings last week. I don't know that that's completely necessary.
See, here's one of those things where...
Well, this is one of... Yeah, this is...
It's a good thing to have a non-politician in certain areas, but it can also be a terrific hindrance.
Well, and this is something where people are assuming that if he wants out of the deal, that he must not understand it. And this is where I think a lot of people don't really get differences in political philosophy, is they think, well, obviously, if you don't believe exactly like I do, you must be either A, uninformed, or B, stupid,
mm-hmm.
which C, probably isn't true. It looks like Jean-Claude Juncker said in Berlin, it looks like that attempt failed. This notion, I am Trump, I am American, America first, and I am getting out, that is not going to happen. However, it could. Some of the president's aides have been searching for a middle ground, perhaps by renegotiating the terms of the agreement in an effort to thread the needle between his base of supporters who oppose the deal and those warning that a U.S. Exit from this would deal a blow to the fight against global warming as well as to worldwide U.S. leadership. And to a certain extent, that is true, with the exception maybe of certain financial responsibilities or certain financial things that we've taken on, we might not be quite as influential as a world opinion maker if we start opposing the rest of the world. On the other hand, who's to say who's right?
What we do.
And the fight has played out within the Trump administration. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson wants to remain in the agreement. Chief Strategist Steve Bannon says, let's get out of it. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt says, let's get out of it. The Chief Economic Advisor, Gary Cohn, says, why don't we just tell them that we are going to reduce our carbon emissions, but we're going to reduce the targets instead of pulling out of the deal completely? In other words, we're going to do something, but we might not do as much necessarily as the whole world wants us to do. Jared Kushner, says he thinks the deal is bad. On the other hand, his wife, who is Ivanka Trump, prefers to stay in. So he is taking an awful lot of advice from different people, as he said, and he'll weigh what's most important. And I'm sure he'll make the announcement and he'll have his reasons at 1 o'clock our time.
Yep. KBOI News Time, 9:27.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
All right, Paul, Jay, and Chris. We are back. Donald Trump tweeted a few minutes ago, "I will be announcing my decision on Paris Accord Thursday at 3 p.m. That would be 3 p.m. Eastern.
So 1 o'clock today, our time.
In the White House Rose Garden, make America great again. The EU and China have reportedly signed an agreement." See, this is where people like us get lost. "The EU and China repeatedly signed an agreement to counteract any action by the U.S. which might undermine the Paris Agreement. When asked about the U.S.'s possible move today, a spokesman for China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs described climate change as a global challenge that no one country can explore."
You know, and this is a slow agreement anyway, mm-hmm. because it's 2017 right now. Anything that you would start doing doesn't actually have to start until the year 2020. And, you know, even once the whole thing is put together, if a nation is not doing what they promised they would do, there's really nobody that's going to hold them to it.
Yeah,
they're going to try. But you know, it's not like the world police can rush in here and say, OK, you guys are going to have sanctions because it's not going to happen. This is just kind of an agreement. And if you don't do it, you don't do it.
Yeah, there's no real foot to the fire thing.
And even everything they've agreed to do will probably, if assuming that the science is all correct about it, it would probably reduce the overall yearly temperature of the average temperature of Earth. It would reduce it about 1.5 degrees.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Rich of Boise. Rich, good morning.
That 1.5 degrees is huge, Chris.
It is a larger number.
Well, yeah,
than it appears.
I do realize that there's a lot that goes on during that 1.5 degrees.
But Trump, for some reason, is trying to save the coal industry. I mean, we have like 300,000-400,000 people who work in like solar, wind, and stuff now. Most of those jobs have been created in like the past 10 to 15 years. Coal industries, there have been continuous job losses in coal industries because we have natural gas, and it wherever there's a coal power plant, there's all kinds of diseases, asthma and stuff to go along with it. They're all dirty. There's no such thing as clean coal, and they pollute the air in the surrounding vicinities. You know, kids have all kinds of problems and stuff. And I don't know why he wants to hang on to this kind of stuff. And I think there's plenty of stuff that guy just does not understand. Remember how he was going to call China a currency manipulator and do all the stuff till he figured out that was a stupid idea? So I think there's a lot of stuff that he doesn't seem to get. But for some reason, he's stuck on this coal industry. I don't know if it's the Koch brothers or whoever, but that's kind of what this is all about. And, you know, the rest of the world is turning away from this. I mean, there's just, in any place you have a coal power plant, there's just all kinds of more respiratory diseases, infant death. There's no such thing as clean coal. It's just dirty. It just puts particulates into the air. And it's not just for global warming. It's for air pollution in general.
I think the reason during the campaign that he said so much about it was to tell people that we're going to put you back to work. But even the people in Kentucky and West Virginia, a great number of them, don't expect to be put back to work at the same jobs they used to have. They would just like to get some kind of a job.
Well, yeah, like I said, coal is on its way out. There's a lot of natural gas, and coal just isn't good. And coal companies had plenty of chances to build a clean coal plant like they kept LSA talking about, and none of them, no place in the world has anybody ever done one. Matter of fact, they've done everything they could to make regulations so they can pollute more, but for some reason he seems to be fixated on it. I don't know exactly why that is.
Yeah, not sure either. All right, Rich, thanks for the call. Let's move on to Rocky of Nampa. Rocky, you're on 670 KBOI. Good morning.
Yeah, and good morning to you. And I just listened to fake news. I don't know what, you know, Rich thinks solar power, a solar panel is made from by magic. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of waste of material. I mean, it's just it's amazing where the thinking is. The a solar panel is only 20% efficient, and it has to be run, and you have to have a storage batteries to keep the to supply the energy when there's no sun. So, and the storage batteries are made of lithium ion or lead acid or whatever they want to use. But nevertheless, there's two items there that are high polluters. So what is he talking about? I prefer to have clean coal. I think there is clean coal. Fact is, I've seen websites that guy scientists talking about it. But nevertheless, what is carbon? What are they talking about? Carbon emissions. What carbon are they talking about? You know, we're a carbon-based entities. That's what this whole world is, carbon-based. So what are they talking about, carbon?
Well,
you know?
No, we're not experts on the science of the whole thing.
Not experts on the science, but they discover how old things are on this planet basically by carbon dating and
right.
But it's above my pay grade.
And that's what they're relying on. And I'm telling you that I know scientists. I hang around scientists. I'm a high-level engineer. I was until I retired, had two heart attacks. But there is no science behind what they're doing. It's simple. The simple fact is that the science, they say, well, it's a consensus of 90% of scientists. Well, that's not true either. The fact is that there's only a few of them, and they're getting paid to say so. So, I mean, you're going to lose your job? Or do you want to tell it like we want it? And that's how it is. As simple as that.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe that, ask people who mentioned in academia who mentioned creation science in a white paper. They were fired. Just mention it. They were fired. So I mean, this is prevalent all over the world, and especially in the United States. So. It's fake science. It's not real. And people are being bamboozled because they don't know.
All right. Good stuff, boy. We got five calls now.
Mm-hmm.
Call earlier next time. Tomorrow's an open phones Friday. We'll delve into this a little bit earlier on into the program.
We're going to take a break, and we will be back with more after this.
Remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. Let's go to Jason of Star. Jason, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I guess I called in because of Rich. I agree with his sentiment. I understand where he comes from. I want the earth protected.
Sure.
I want to be good stewards. I understand that. And I'm not trying to sound like talking points. This is just me. Many of the people who push all this global warming stuff, the climate change, and the massive amount of kind of political, economic controls that come with it, as far as I'm concerned, seem to mostly be, they don't believe in God or the Bible. I don't get the impression, or intelligent design or creation. Fine. But they don't mind playing God when it comes to planet Earth. That's weird to me. They don't mind playing God. They're gonna save the heavens and the planet. You know. So and I come from a science background. I love science, and I think science and the Bible can agree on a lot of things. My thing is, which I do believe in a lot of science, is that there's a lot of false or misleading science or debatable science behind it. And what frustrates me as a common person without the money to drive fancy electric cars and solar paneled houses. Is the science is too sci-fi for the practical common person. It's still too in the future. It hasn't reached a practical place where we can all afford the Tesla car and these weird houses.
Sure.
They want to design. Rich people can do all the cool stuff, and live differently than most of us, but fossil fuels are still so cost-effective, and the science is solid and sound. All the stuff they want us to switch to will be catastrophic for average people and average economics, and they can't really prove it otherwise. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it does make sense.
I'd be happy to switch if they could make it where you and I and everybody else could have reasonably priced vehicles that, whatever, drive on, you know, compressed air and electricity. If they want to change how we do our electric grid, I'm fine with all of it if 100 years from now the science could be now, not 50 or 100 years from now where I can't afford it. It's out of the price range of our utilities and our purchasing power
right.
for the average person. That's the big frustration.
Yeah, and it is very frustrating. All right, good stuff.
Thank you.
Yep, let's go to John and Sweet. John, good morning.
Good morning, Paul J. One thing which is not mentioned on this whole solar power issue is Idaho Power has to buy back power that is generated out of these solar farms. And the price they have to pay is between 30 and 40 cents per kilowatt hour. Now, contrast that with our normal rate fee determined by the PUC at about 8 cents a kilowatt hour. And I don't think the citizens of Idaho are ready to have their power bills jump by a factor of 5 or 6. The contract originally mandated a 10-year obligation from Idaho Power. The PUC is trying to get it reduced to 2. So that might be a talking point you can look into on the, you know, while you're on vacation. Anyway, there's no such thing as free energy. Solar power sounds great, but it ain't free. Yeah. All right, thanks.
Thanks. There are no free lunches.
Hmm. Quick instant message here. Helena McCall says, pulling out doesn't mean we are not working on emissions, but maybe there is a financial reason the U.S. Bearing most of the expense. It'll all work out okay, in or out. Be optimistic.
Yeah.
I'm not usually terribly optimistic, but I guess I could be.
Yeah. Let's go to Scotty. Scotty, you got about a minute.
Okay. this idea of no clean coal, what they're doing now, every time they build a chimney stack, they're putting in what they call scrubbers. That helps to lower the stuff that's going into the air. Also, Britain has taken this to a great length. Your electricity over in the UK is very, very high. In fact, what they're doing now, if you own a diesel vehicle, that is a private car, it's to be off the road by the middle of next year because they're talking about emissions. But what they're forgetting about is the diesel electric trains. How much emissions are the diesel trains doing? Also, United Nations, America foots the bill. We are the biggest payers into this so-called global warming scheme. In fact, Mr. Obama took it upon himself to do it. But as the gentleman there said at the last caller, your electric will shoot up.
Yep. Well, indeed. Thanks, Scotty.
Yeah, appreciate all the calls this morning and all the instant messages.
Open Phones Friday coming up tomorrow. We'll continue this or another conversation.
What you want to talk about, that'll be tomorrow.
KBOI News Time, 9:56.